It's out there now. It's closing in. Do you see it shape more clearly? Obi-Wan asked. It's a time of trial. For me. Do you fear it? Anakin shook his head, but kept staring up at the sky. I fear my reaction. What if I'm not good enough? I have trust in you. What if the Magister doesn't want us to get a ship? Then we'll learn something new, Obi-Wan said patiently. Glow lights mounted beside the pathway switched on and illuminated the way to the lowest and closest block of the Magister's dwelling. A small figure appeared at the end of the path and walked toward them with arms folded. It was a girl, taller than Anakin, but no older, and she wore a long green Sokotan robe of the kind they had become familiar with. Welcome. My name is Wend, she said. The girl scrutinized Obi-Wan with mild approval, and he returned her gentle dip of the chin. My father is bored and welcomes any distraction, the girl said. Would you follow me, please? The Magister was a small man, wiry in build, with a long, narrow face and large black eyes. I have four daughters and three sons. My sons and two of my daughters are in training around Zonama. They are concerned with defense. Who better to help us than Jedi? He had met them in the hall of the uppermost of three levels in this branch of the palace. The interiors of the three rooms they had seen thus far were plain to the point of austerity, though the furniture was well-designed and comfortable. Obi-Wan was not familiar with Faroan styles, but he judged all the furniture here was from the Magister's birth world and had been carried here by the original settlers. My assistants at middle distance tell me you paid in Orodians, the Magister said. That was a tip-off. And then your experience with the Seed Partners confirmed my suspicions. We did not intend deception, Obi-Wan said. You did not announce yourselves as Jedi, however, the Magister said. Well, there was never a need for deceit. I have nothing against the Jedi. In fact, I owe them a great deal. I have nothing against the Republic they serve, and I have nothing to hide. Except an entire planet. My planet, he chuckled. That's all I'm protecting. Anakin stood relaxed and ready, assuming nothing as he had been trained. With the barest of signals, Obi-Wan had alerted his Padawan that they were now acting as Jedi, representatives of the Order and the Temple, but in a covertly defensive mode. Something was not right. Something was incomplete. We've come here for another reason, Obi-Wan said. We're looking for a... The air seemed to shimmer inside the large room. Obi-Wan shook his head. He had been about to ask a question, and it had fled from the tip of his tongue, leaving no trace. Our way of life is precious to me, the Magister said calmly. As you can see, we have something unique on Zonama Sikot. Customers, clients come and go away with only a vague notion as to where they've been. He smiled. Not that our little tricks in that regard will work against Jedi. A second girl walked from a door on the opposite side of the room. She was identical in appearance to the first, of the same age and size, and wore the same long green Sokotan dress. Obi-Wan's critical faculties were fully engaged. Something is being playful, he thought. Or testing us. Or hiding. Still, I'm pleased you've come, the Magister continued. I wanted, needed, to meet with you personally. You appear to be the genuine article, a master and an apprentice. You've studied the Jedi? No, the Magister said, grimacing as if at an unpleasant memory. I was a promising student. There were difficulties, not entirely of my own making, misperceptions, but that was 50 years ago. Obi-Wan judged the man before him to be no more than 40. But then, deeper still, a question. What man? His facial expressions are subtly false. Not that he's lying, but he does not know how to interact with his fellows like a marionette. The Magister lifted his hands. Sikot seems to have taken a distinct liking to you. All is explained. Sikot is very sensitive, and it favors Jedi. Very well. I accept you as clients. You may proceed. Please, excuse me. There's so much work to do. I trust you'll be comfortable on your way back to middle distance. The Magister smiled warmly at Anakin and left the room. The evening breeze passed cool and sweet over them as the Magister's daughter left them by the transport. It had been one of the strangest meetings in Obi-Wan's experience, strange, unsatisfying, unrevealing. The man and his daughters were not real. Yet the illusion had been powerful and almost completely convincing. In Obi-Wan's experience, not even a Jedi Master could delude two Jedi at once. Yet the Council had long suspected that the Sith knew how to disguise themselves and pass undetected by Jedi. Obi-Wan was positive, however, that this was no Sith conspiracy. "Maybe now we know why they call him Magister," Anakin said in a low voice as they boarded the transport. "Maybe nobody really gets to meet him, and that's how he protects himself." Obi-Wan held his finger to his lips. Persuading the pilot not to listen was insufficient. The transport itself, as part of Sikkot, was now suspect, and Obi-Wan doubted he could effectively use Jedi persuasion and deception on the living tissue, the biosphere of an entire world. "We've met our match," Obi-Wan thought grimly. "Perhaps that is what happened to Vergaer, and she is hidden, completely hidden from us." Then he faced his Padawan across the space between the seats. He moved his lips without sound. "The planet's recent past is closed to us. Observe the path of the transport. We fly a zigzag course. We may be avoiding other evidence of the battle, if there was a battle. We cannot avoid passing over the one scar. It seems to be too large to miss." Anakin agreed.
"Someone is hiding something."
The boy sighed.
"I'll bet it all has to do with Vergaer and why she came here in the first place."
Anakin slept very little that night. His bed was crowded and busy with 12 molting seed partners. They crawled around on his thin covers, mewling plaintively, and occasionally fell to the floor with soft plops, then cried to be picked up. The seeds were splitting along one side, showing firm, white flesh covered by a thick and downy fuzz. Their spikes had twisted into three thick, stiff feet on one side, and along the seam of the sloughing shell, the spikes were curling up and withering away. In the morning, Obi-Wan emerged from his room, trailing his three seed partners. The Master greeted his Padawan with a grunt, as a special breakfast was served on the veranda outside. They sat in comfortable laminate chairs and drank a sweet juice neither of them could identify, and soon Obi-Wan sniffed the air and said, "We smell different." "They're preparing us for the next step," Anakin said. "If we're going to guide the seed partners, we have to smell right." The seed partners now found them irresistible and tried to stay even closer if that was possible. Some of them had shed their old shells completely and emerged as pale, oblate balls with two thick, wide-spaced front legs, two black dots for eyes in between, and two smaller legs at the rear. All the legs were equipped with three-hook graspers that could give quite a pinch. Now that Anakin and Obi-Wan had passed inspection by the Magister, Gam delivered client ropes to them, red and black, conspicuous amongst all the green. The design phase was about to begin. Sheik Lafarge told them that her husband, Shopper, would guide them in this. Later, the seeds would be combined and sent off to those mysterious Sikkotan manufactories called Gentari, of which they were being told very little. Only one ship would be made by the Gentari, Gan informed them, but he thought it was likely to be a special ship indeed, coming from 15 seeds. Obi-Wan and Anakin followed Gan and Sheikla along a narrow walkway outside the broad windows of Shapafar's office. They pushed through a door and entered a small, cramped design room. Shapafar's sat on a tall stool in the center of a half-circle drafting table, his head enveloped in a drafting helmet, ascribing broad arcs with a repliscribe clenched in his left hand. The only hand he had, since his right arm was missing. Anakin noted that the remaining hand sported only two fingers and a thumb. "Working with Gentari must be dangerous," Anakin whispered to Obi-Wan. Shopper grinned toothily and removed the helmet. Not the Gentari, he said with a quick melodic laugh. It's forging and shaping that can knock a few limbs away. The forgers and shapers never did teach me how to handle their tools, so here I stay now. He stood and bowed deeply. Welcome to my domain. Shall we fashion something unique and beautiful today? Shopafars was a small, slender man, immaculately dressed. His face was narrow and flat, his nose barely projecting from between prominent cheekbones, and his hair was almost black with age. He glanced at Obi-Wan. You pay, he flies. Is that it? We're buying the spacecraft together, Obi-Wan said, and he will fly. I'll bet your seat partners are chewing up the upholstery in my waiting room right now, Shoppa said. He focused on Anakin. Would you like to see what's possible? Anakin's face glowed with enthusiasm. It's why I'm here, he said quietly. The young man has an appetite. Very well, let's feed. Here. Shoppa flung out his hand and grabbed a broad, crackling sheet of change flimsyplast. Hold this, he told Gan. Gan held one edge, and Shoppa unrolled it with deft, fast fingers. On the change flimsy was precisely sketched, in red and brown lines, a lovely starship, all compound curves and gentle swellings, the engines nestled within graceful fairings, the surface shaded with marvelous artistry to look smooth and taut. I've wanted to make a ship like this for some time, but it was only a dream, Shoppa said. No seed wants to get this complicated, and clients bring me only 3 or 4 seeds. But for you... Shoppa smiled and swept his fingers over the drawing. At his prompting, the flimsyplast produced different perspectives, each new sketch stored in the porous surface and emerging on the artist's command. Shoppa handed Obi-Wan the edge of the flimsy and tapped Anakin on the shoulder. Can you draft? He said. I have a second helmet, and a third. Come, clients, I'm sure you have some of your own ideas. The rest of the morning passed quickly. Obi-Wan found himself deeply absorbed in the design process, as absorbed as his Padawan, whose involvement was intense. The Bloodcarver made his report to Wraith Sinar on a catwalk overlooking the bay that contained most of the squadron's battle droids. They were still too far from Zonama Sikot to make detailed observations, so Sinar had sent Kedaiv down in a fleet 2-passenger spy ship with banked engine flares. We made our way in and returned without being scanned, Kedaiv said. We looked at what was immediately visible and nothing more. Sinar nodded. Good. From what I've been told, the whole planet is sensitive. There are signs of a recent struggle. At least 15 deep slashes in the crust, over 3 kilometers wide. Not natural. They are mostly hidden by the southern clouds, but I saw long, straight dips in the clouds along the equator, signifying clefts many kilometers deep. Perhaps these are the effects of large orbital weapons, though they are of a type unfamiliar to me. Sinar's face went blank. He was thinking. Are you sure they're not an excavation, some massive construction project? No, Kedaiv said. In the slash visible above the equator, there are jagged edges, scorch marks, jumbled terrain. Sinar cocked his head to one side. Did you see the factory valley? Yes, Kedaiv said. It is 1,000 kilometers long, 3 kilometers deep, and lined on both sides by huge growths much larger than anything else we could see. Gentari, Sinar breathed. What we would not give to have that valley installed on another world, some more practical location. He shook his head wistfully. Did you see any ships? No. The valley was engaged in some manufacture of large objects, not ships, but like pieces of ships or equipment. And then, without warning, the valley was covered by huge limbs, growths, hiding it from view. I believe we were not observed, but this concerned me enough that I decided we should return. Excellent, excellent, Sinar said. Now for the next step. Tarkin informed you we would attempt to capture a ship, did he not? Yes, Kedaiv confirmed. He didn't have the slightest notion how difficult that might be. but he's far too used to wealth to realize how useful it can be. I will reveal another part of my not-so-little secret to you, because you are such an excellent and efficient fellow. T. Dive leaned forward to catch Sinar's words. We have with us a very elegant little starship in its own bay, on this flagship, not part of the normal complement, one of my private vessels. Obviously the craft of a well-to-do individual. Scrubbed of identity, but waiting for a new owner. He smiled at the memory of persuading Tarkin to approve this addition to the squadron. A rich and well-bred owner, Sinar continued, who has stumbled across one of the approved pilots and sales representatives of Zonama Sikot, and convinced him, or it, of his wealth and legitimate interest in the art of spacecraft design. That would be you. I did my research well on Coruscant. You come from an influential family. Powerful, not wealthy, Kidaev corrected with a slight hiss. Yes, indeed, the concentration of resources being a sin of sorts among your kind. Well, now you have ample sin to work with. Over 6 million credits at your disposal in untraceable Republic bonds. Quite sufficient to buy a Sikotan ship. Kidaev's eyes grew smaller and sunk deeper into his skull. Though he was constitutionally incapable of being impressed by wealth, he knew how much 6 million credits was, and how much it would impress others. How do you know all this about Zonama Sikot? Not your concern, Sinar said lightly. He really did enjoy Kidaev's reactions. The constant sense of treading in dangerous territory was stimulating. I would like to introduce you to your sponsor on Zonama Sikot, the authorized representative, in my quarters in 1 hour, Sinar told the blood carver. Kidaev may have felt curiosity. Emotions or impulses were hard to read on the face of the highborn blood carver, but he simply bowed his head and narrowed his nose wings. The black and red ritual airship carried them beyond the last dwellings of Middle Distance and along a narrowing in the canyon. Anakin stood in the prow, foot propped in a heroic pose on a forward cleat. Obi-Wan stood 2 steps behind him, letting the boy enjoy this moment. There would be little enough joy in the next few weeks, he suspected. What Anakin had detected days before and called a single wave now left the space around them charged with a feeling of imminent and massive change in the Force, which Obi-Wan could only describe as a void. Neither Qui-Gon nor any other Jedi Master had ever hinted at such things. That the change was coming from beyond Zonama Sikot, however, was not as apparent to Obi-Wan as it had been to Anakin. I sense something very close, triggered by something from without. But Anakin is correct. It will be a trial. The boy looked back and grinned at his master. The seeds are trembling. Feel them? They know something big is happening. The canyon walls spread farther apart and the airship moved closer to the eastern rim. Anakin's partners grew more agitated as the airship glided above some of the most spectacular congregations of Sikotan creatures they had yet seen. With more perches available on the canyon walls, boras and other organisms had carved out terraces similar to those that contained the houses at Middle Distance. In their natural state, the terraces supported dense jungles. Like acrobats, large, long-limbed climbers they'd not seen at Middle Distance slowly lifted themselves up and over the canopy with slender, vine-clinging claws. Avians with translucent carapaces flitted over broad flowers spread wide in the sun. Minutes later, the flowers folded their spectacular petals, broke loose from the boras, and slowly climbed up hanging tendrils to higher, more brightly lit terraces. A young woman emerged from the small gondola cabin and walked past Obi-Wan with a polite smile. Her attention was on Anakin, however, and she paused beside him in the bow. Obi-Wan observed them with interest, not least because this girl was the spitting image of the Magister's illusory twin daughters. This girl, however, was solid and real. A seed slipped down Anakin's arm in small jerks. Anakin turned to lift it back onto his shoulder and saw the girl. His eyes widened. Have we met? She asked him with a pretty frown of inquiry. You look familiar, Anakin said. Oh, then maybe it was one of Father's things, she said, nodding as if that explained everything. He puts holograms of me in different places at different times. It's aggravating. How does he do that? Anakin asked, but the girl decided not to answer. Sheikla told me to explain the different kind of Boras here, but what's your name? Father forgets that when I'm not really there, I don't actually meet people. Anakin was at a loss for a moment and looked past her at Obi-Wan. She, too, looked over her shoulder. Is he your father? No, Anakin said. He's my teacher. Didn't your father tell you? There's a lot my father doesn't tell me, and a lot you don't know about my father. I actually haven't seen him in months, not since... Her eyes lost their focus for a moment, then brightened once more. I am Anakin Skywalker, and this is Obi-Wan Kenobi. Well, Anakin, I'm supposed to tell you about Boras, and where they come from, and what they do when they're forged and annealed. You can listen to, she said, glancing back at Obi-Wan. Thank you, Obi-Wan said. By the way, my name is... Wind, Anakin said. She laughed. Wrong. That's one of Father's jokes. My real name is Jabitha. She took a deep breath. Seeds are where the Boras begin. Each Bora creates seeds in the middle of our summer when the storms whirl out of the south and bring rain. Most of the seeds creep off into the growth, the Tampazi in the old Faroan language. Boras means trees, and Tampazi means forest, but they're not really trees or forests. All right, Anakin said. The vibrating seeds were a real distraction now. Jabitha patted a few of his restless seeds, and her touch seemed to soothe them for the moment. The seeds take root in a nursery protected by the oldest Boras. Then they go through the forging. The Boras drop dead limbs and old dry leaves all over the nursery until the entire open area is covered. The seeds just dig around and eat and eat and eat for hours, growing all the time. When the seeds are big enough, the oldest Boras call down lightning from the sky. Just call it down with uplifted branches. The branches actually have iron tips. The lightning forks down and sets what's left of the nursery heap ablaze, and the seeds kind of cook inside, though they aren't killed. Something changes, and they split open. Other Boras, called annealers, have these long spade-like shaping arms that sculpt the exploded seeds. The air is thick with this perfumey smell like cakes in an oven. It's very complicated, but when they're done, the seeds become different kinds of Boras, and they can move out of the nursery and take up their places in the Tampazi. When did the settlers learn to control the shaping? Obi-Wan asked. Before I was born, Jabitha said. My grandfather was the first magister. He and my grandmother studied the Boras and made friends with them. That's a really long story. And they were allowed to watch the changes in a Tampazi nursery. After a while, the Boras invited them in as shapers, but it took them 20 years to learn the craft. They taught it to my father. A few years later, the rest of the settlers came from Pharaoh. The image we saw of you in the Magister's house was not a hologram, Obi-Wan said. It was a mental image projected by some extraordinary will. Jabitha looked uncomfortable. I guess that's my father, then, she said. Have you ever shaped anything? Anakin asked. I helped my mother make our house a couple of years ago. Anakin shook his head. It all sounds terrific. But I don't see how you can turn these seeds into spacecraft. You have to be patient, Jabitha said petulantly. She looked at Obi-Wan. My father made the first spacecraft when he was a boy. They used the engines from their original colony ship. Why did your father decide to sell these spacecraft? Jabitha ignored Obi-Wan's question. Look, we're getting close! The airship was pulled into a docking chute and tied down. Jabitha leapt over the railing onto the landing and helped Anakin out of the gondola. Obi-Wan, she left to his own devices. Jabitha could become a distraction for Anakin, But likely a welcome one, Obi-Wan decided. She might take his mind off ships and help him come to a better understanding of social relationships. Anakin's social upbringing had been piecemeal at best. A few normal encounters with people his own age could be very helpful, and this girl seemed refreshingly normal. When she's actually physically present. But Obi-Wan was concerned about so many unanswered questions. They were still no closer to understanding what had happened to Verger. Wraith Synar looked down on the small image of Ket that flickered to bluish life on his command table. Yes, Captain? Ket seemed uncomfortable.
I have complied with your orders and released the Bloodcarver in your ship, Commander.
And he is well away, heading towards Zonamasikot?
Yes, sir.
Synar breathed a sigh of relief. He had introduced Ki Daiv to his sponsoring pilot in the docking bay where the private starship had been loaded. Ki Daiv had seemed uncomfortable working with a droid, but Synar had not bothered to explain how he had come by this droid, or how the droid had become a sponsor for clients for Zonamasikot. Some secrets were best kept. We will await word from Ki Daiv before we make our next move, but you seem unhappy, Captain Ket.
May I speak freely, Commander?
Indeed, please do.
I do not trust this Bloodcarver, sir. His people are notorious for fiery tempers and dirty deeds.
He was handpicked by Tarkin. You have in your orders that he is to be accorded complete cooperation in whatever he might do.
I am aware of that, sir. I wish to communicate my unease, sir.
So noted. I hope you will maintain your vigilance.
Yes, sir.
Synar disconnected and the image blipped into nothing. Using the Bloodcarver as a client was not a brilliant stratagem, but it would serve. Judging from all he had learned from the dying pilot of the ruined Sokotan craft now in his hangar back on Coruscant, things Synar had not revealed to Tarkin. He'd even lied to Tarkin about how he had obtained the ship. Facts that he had learned long before Tarkin had in his slippery way tried to involve Synar in this overblown and all too obvious scheme. From the pilot's dying words, encouraged by subtle Agrilat drugs, Synar had concluded that Zonamasikot's settlers were hungry for something, or just plain greedy, that they had found a treasure of incredible proportions, and instead of arranging for a well-orchestrated exploitation with bidding wars conducted between members of the Trade Federation, they had taken a decidedly risky path. Catering to the galaxy's spoiled little rich boys, figuratively speaking, and engaging in a remarkable but ultimately futile quest to hide themselves. The settlers needed capital to buy things. Expensive things. They needed it quickly and quietly and as soon as possible. The pilot, a newly wealthy Gensang spice thief, had picked up a curious sort of compact protocol droid in a gambling palace on Serpine. The droid had been acquired by the Gensang in a life-or-death, total-forfeit game. The droid had told its new master a fantastic tale. It claimed it was fully qualified to take customers to a mysterious world that made the fastest starships. The Gensang had been intrigued. He had passed a puzzling social-psychological test conducted by the droid, showed the droid part of his cache of bonds, more than sufficient, and had been warned he would experience the adventure of a lifetime on an exotic world, some details of which he would, soon after, almost completely forget. It had been the Gensang's misfortune to buy his Sokotan ship and then run afoul of thieves. They had taken the Gensang and the droid, along with the disintegrating remains of the ship, and had sold them all to Synar's agents for a tidy sum. Synar's agents had then killed the thieves. Such was the endless roil of greed. Synar had let the protocol droid perform its tests on the Bloodcarver. As he had suspected, the Bloodcarver had passed handily. Elegance, education, good family, and the sight of so many credits piled on the floor of the commander's cabin had tripped all the droid's little circuits. Now the droid was flying with Ki Daiv in Synar's personal starcraft to Zonamasikot. If Khedaiv brought back one of the planet's wondrous ships, Sinar was ready with all the surgical and mind-wipe tools necessary to turn the blood carver into his own personal chauffeur. He would analyze the living Secotan craft, learn its secrets, and reverse Tarkin's game with such stunning speed that his old friend would never recover. And that could give Sinar the power and influence necessary to cut his own deals with any emerging political power. Sinar gave a great sigh. The game was truly interesting now. Reaching the docking ramp, it turned out, was just the beginning of a new leg of the Jedi's journey. Anakin, Obi-Wan, Jabitha, and Gam walked quickly down the carved steps of a steeply slanting volcanic tube to a low-ceilinged cavern set with dimly glowing lanterns. They could hear the sound of rushing water. "An underground river," Anakin said. Jabitha nodded. "But we have to descend some distance before we get to it." After another 20 minutes, they emerged from the end of the tube into a wide, round chamber carved out of the basalt. A stone slab jutted into swift water, which flowed around it with a guttural rumble. A slender boat floated in a calm spot in the slab's shadow. Ahead, they could dimly see a mouth leading even deeper into the planet's crust. They boarded the boat, and Gan pulled it out of the calm into the swift water. The river rushed down a broad, dark channel. The Seed Partners was still. Anakin was concerned that they might be sick or even dead. Jabitha reassured him this was not the case. "They know we're going to see the Forgers and Shapers. It's a serious moment for a Seed." "How do they know?" Anakin asked. "This river feeds the Factory Valley," she said. "It's carried seeds for millions of years. They just recognize it."
"What can you tell us about the Gentari?" Obi-Wan asked. "What are they?"
"They're very large shapers that work for us and with us, you'll see. Grandfather trained them first. Trained them or made them, or both."
She sounded very proud. As their eyes adjusted, they spotted long red lines glowing on the tunnel ceiling. Gan played a torch beam on the rock, revealing close bundled tendrils of red and green.
"Sikot sends these through the rivers and tunnels and caverns," he said reverently. "All parts of the planet are connected."
"Except for the south," Jabitha said quietly.
"And why not down there?" Obi-Wan asked.
"I don't know," she said. "Father told us it was all finished down there."
"That's where his house is," Anakin said.
Gan broke in. "The south died of a disease. Just a few months ago, the entire hemisphere." His face appeared ashen in the moving light of his torch.
"His hands are shaking," Obi-Wan observed.
"Was it a war?"
Anakin asked.
Gan tightened his jaw muscles and shook his head. "No," he said. "Just a disease."
"You shouldn't talk any more about that," Jabitha said. "Even I don't know what happened down there."
"Does your father know?" Obi-Wan asked. The girl gave him a veiled look that held no small amount of anger. Best not to pursue the matter.
Captain Kett preceded Sinar down the bright corridor leading to the Admiral Corvin's shuttle bay.
"Your ship has arrived at the Northern Plateau, Commander. We've received a laser beacon signal from Khedaiv himself. The protocol droid has established its credentials and presented him."
Sinar nodded absently at the news.
He was about to inspect the squadron. If Khedaiv failed to buy a Secotan ship, the next step would be all too Tarkinish. A show of power diplomacy at close quarters. He was confident he could make what he had seem a very tangible threat under the circumstances. Something has burned them already, once burned, perhaps twice cowed. Unless they faced an even greater threat and prevailed.
"Maintain squadron distance and keep all intership communication to a minimum," Sinar told Kett.
"I want no one scanning that planet. We are not here."
"Yes, sir."
"We're very close," Sinar said, rubbing his hands on his sleeves. They were unaccountably damp with sweat.
"I will not tolerate any mistakes."
A dim green light dropped like thick syrup from the end of the tunnel. The river had settled into a smooth, gently roiling flow as the cavern widened. Gan guided the boat with a few deft stabs of the pole, and it bobbed against the dock's buffers. Obi-Wan walked forward and saw that his Padawan had fallen asleep. Jabitha sat near his head, her hand brushing at the boy's silky hair, and looked up at Obi-Wan.
Should we just let him sleep? There's time.
Anakin slept like a baby in the girl's presence. That was significant. Obi-Wan was well aware of the boy's frequent nightmares. He seemed much younger asleep. Obi-Wan could easily bring back in memory the 9-year-old who had become his apprentice, now grown 2 handspans taller. He misses the female. Thracia Cholin knew that. Obi-Wan reached out, then hesitated. He felt a strong urge not to wake the boy, to let him sleep like this forever, to forever anticipate a great adventure, forever dream of personal triumph and joy. This must be how a father feels, looking down on his son, worried about an uncertain future, Obi-Wan thought. Someone familiar seemed to stand at his shoulder, and wonderingly Obi-Wan murmured, "He's no more special than any other child, is he?" Like a whisper in reply,
"To you, he is. And now you know."
Obi-Wan swung about and saw Gan approaching. The voice had not been Gan's.
"Time to move on," Gan said.
With a small shiver, Obi-Wan gripped Anakin's shoulder and gave him a single gentle shake. Anakin, as always, came from deep sleep to instant alertness, and together, master and apprentice climbed out of the long boat. "I dreamed I was with Qui-Gon," Anakin said. "He was teaching me something, I forget what." The boy smiled and stretched his arms. "He said to tell you hello. He said, you're so hard to talk to." Anakin ran for the dock and stepped up onto a ledge of stone. Obi-Wan stood as if stunned by a blow, then set his jaw and followed his Padawan. Climbing flights of stone steps, the party of 4 ascended to the surface. "This is the head of the Factory Valley," Gan said as they reached the top of the last long flight of stairs. Anakin's extra brace of seed partners felt particularly heavy after the climb. Jabitha had run ahead, reaching the top before they did, and now rejoined them, her face wreathed in a smile. Anakin looked up at the high arching branches of boras densely interlaced over 100 meters overhead, forming the roof of an immense hall. Sunlight filtered through the thick canopy, casting a dreamlike green-tinted light over a causeway of stones. The causeway extended for several kilometers between straight walls composed of long, close-packed, octagonal columns of lava. The air beneath the canopy was dense and moist, blood temperature not easy to breathe. It was filled with thick, sweet smells, flowers and cakes, wine and ale, and an intense undertone of soil. Their seed partners shivered violently.
"They can't wait much longer," Gan said.
Anakin could not believe he was actually here. Had he dreamed this place that it seemed so familiar? With every step, he felt as if he were 2 people. One who had been here before, who knew all this so well, and a young boy born on another world far, far away. But Anakin bore down and drew these selves together, using Jedi discipline to sharpen and unify his consciousness, and to unify and bring to order all those ranks of thought below consciousness. All but the lowest and most private layer of self, on the edge of non-self. It was here that this other self lurked, with its vague, dark, and separate memories. Anakin decided that now was no time to report this anomaly to his master. What looked like large red, black, and green insects, each with 7 legs, marched along the causeway toward them. Their bodies were wide and flat, with 3 legs on each side and a 7th central leg front and center. 2 long gray thorn-like spurs thrust up from beside the central leg.
They seem to have been born to carry heavy cargo. On each of these creatures, a stocky, soot-smudged man rode between the spurs, gripping them with hands covered with thick black gloves. "Are those Gentari?" Anakin asked Jabitha.
"No," she said, laughing lightly. "They're carapods. The men riding them are forgers."
"Are the carapods alive?"
"Mostly. Some are part machine."
Gan looked down at Anakin. "We leave you here with the forgers. They will prepare your seeds and take you to the Shapers and the Gentari." He looked sad and a little resentful. "I have never been beyond this point. It is the Magister's will."
"Good luck," Jabitha said. "I'll catch up with you at the other end."
She returned to the steps with Gan and gave Anakin one last glance over her shoulder. Then she quickly descended. "I grow weary of ceremony and mystery," Obi-Wan said, "and I tire of being passed hand to hand like old clothes."
"I think it's wizard," Anakin said, and he did.
Still, he knew Obi-Wan was suspicious, and with good cause. Anakin frowned.
"I'm so excited, and yet I'm a little afraid. Master, why do I feel that way?"
"The seeds are talking to us," Obi-Wan said. "Some of them have been here before, perhaps with Verger. You're hearing their enthusiasm and responding to their memories."
"Of course," Anakin said. "The seeds! Why didn't I think of that?"
"Because you carry so many, they're flooding you," Obi-Wan said. "Listen to them, but control your connection with the Force, Padawan. Do not forget who and what you are." Then the expression on his master's face grew more and more peculiar. The carapods drew up around them, yet Obi-Wan paid them no attention.
"Verger," he finally said. "In the seeds, she's left a message."
He drew himself up and composed his features just as one of the forgers clambered down from his mount and approached them with a dark and determined expression.
"What does she say?"
Anakin asked in a whisper.
"She's left Zonama Sikot to pursue an even greater mystery. The message is not clear. Something about beings from beyond the boundaries, unknown to the Jedi. She had to move very quickly."
The rider's thick-skinned, heavily wrinkled face looked squashed and sunburned, and his eyes were a reddish hazel as if filled with fire.
"Clients, get on," the forger said gruffly, smirking and pointing to the step-like first joint of his carapod's center leg. "We're getting our last load." He raised his head and shouted, "Team, in line."
The carapods and their riders formed a tight single line.
"Let's go and get our seeds in before they start up with more big ones."
The carapods proceeded at a remarkably smooth and comfortable gallop, legs thudding with hypnotic rhythm against the floor of the stone causeway. Anakin looked once more at Obi-Wan. His master seemed to be in control again, face firm. The carapods trotted to where the stone columns ended, and the forgers brought them to a halt. Here, beyond the basalt causeway, the factory valley broadened out onto a plain covered with tightly coiled tendrils arranged like markers on a game board. It was the biggest enclosed space Anakin had ever seen. Clouds bunched up around the tops of the pillars, and in the distance, kilometers away, a thick layer of mist below the interwoven canopy was actually condensing out as rain.
"We keep the forging pits here."
The red-faced forger dropped down from the carapod and pointed to where thick billows of smoke boiled up from red-lit pits near the overgrown valley walls. He looked up to count their seed partners, his lips moving as he jabbed his finger.
"You have a lot of 'em, boy. Give 'em to me and follow."
Anakin took his 12 seeds and gently plucked them away from his clothes. Each made a tiny squeak, but did not attempt to hang on. He passed them to the forger, who tossed them to the back of the carapod.
"They ride, you walk," the forger announced, and then took Obi-Wan's complement of 3. "The most and the least," he added with a sniff. "Make 'em as one for the clients they hand over to us. That's the way. Good thing you got me. rather than them. He flung his thumb back over his shoulder at the other forgers, who laughed. He hooted and laughed back. They're all amateurs compared to me. I can easily forge 15 and persuade them to join.
Don't listen to the braggart,
another forger called out.
You'll be lucky to end up with a handcart.
Ah, they're giving you the complete experience, their forger growled. Never mind, we're buds, us all.
He squinted at them and rubbed his arms, knocking off shed bits of white shell from many seed partners.
The old magister picked us out by hand and told us to make families. The Faroans upland, the Langacy down. We know our places. He did right.
Anakin had learned about a small and ancient world called Langesa, had read about it in the temple map room. It had been overrun 100 years before by Cinnamals, who had enslaved the Langesi natives, forcing huge migrations to other parts of the galaxy. They had specialized in farming and the vital arts, learning how to mold the elements of life into new and novel forms.
But never mind the details. You'll get your ship, and then the uplanders will bring on a forgetting. Still, you'll have the complete experience. You'll remember the forging pits and, he leered, making a grotesque ruddy mask of his face, my name is Vagno. You'll remember me.
Captain Kett climbed to the navigation bridge and handed Sinar a decoded message from Ki Daive. There appears to be a difficulty on Zonamasi Coat, he said. Sinar read the message with a blank expression. He's been rejected, Sinar said. Something about seed partners taking a dislike to him, chewing off all his clothes. We cannot rely on Ki Daive, Sinar concluded. I also have a message from Tarkin, Kett said with a twitch of his lips. He gave Sinar the second small cylinder, and the commander read the brief message on the secure rollout. He's getting nervous. He wants an update, Sinar said, pursing his lips. Shall we move into a diplomatic orbit or a negotiation orbit? Kett asked. All systems and droids are ready. Taking action immediately could be the best foundation for a reply. It would be if I were Tarkin, Sinar said, regarding his first officer shrewdly. But I am not here to play political games. Ki Daive still has his instructions, and I will give him another day. Something told him massive action on their part would be a huge mistake. He keyed a quick reply into the secure datapad and handed it back to Kett. Kett lingered, as if he might be made privy to what was on the message. Sinar turned away. On the datapad he had written, Your operative has tried to assassinate me and failed. I gave him a suicide mission of honor. Have discovered something unexpected and quite marvelous. Am proceeding with my own plans. Do not require assistance. Sinar smiled. That would undoubtedly bring Tarkin running with the biggest force he could assemble. But it would be days before he arrived, and by then, Sinar would have tried all his plans and engaged all the forces at his own disposal. With deep misgivings, Anakin watched Vagno toss their seed partners into the pit. Night had fallen over the arched canopy, and the only light came from torches carried by the forger's assistants or hung from poles stuck into the cindery ground, and from the fires scattered at some distance around the valley. Some of the pits are huge, Anakin said to Obi-Wan. I wonder what they make there. I don't think they make anything while clients are around, Obi-Wan said. Their forger had said, before they start up with more big ones. Big what? Vagno's assistants gathered at the edge of their pit, which was about 20 meters across. Each assistant in the crew carried a long, razor-sharp, scythe-like blade on the end of a metal pole. Carapods dumped their loads of fuel on top of the seed partners, and Vagno directed his crew to even out the piles.
Your seeds are quiet, he said thoughtfully. Moment of destiny.
How many survive?
Anakin asked, his throat dry. He could still feel the separate flavors or voices of the seeds in his mind, lingering traces of their need, their affection.
Most. Don't worry. And remember, it's the way of Sikote.
The connection with the seeds, Obi-Wan said. Beware.
Of what?
They are about to be transformed. No one here knows what that feels like to them. But you and I perhaps will learn.
Oh, Anakin said. He swallowed a lump in his throat.
Vagno shone his torch beam up, and Anakin saw a circular shape like a thick hoop descend from the canopy. Carapods there were lowering it on heavy tendrils. As it descended over the pit, limbs unfolded from the underside and displayed a variety of implements, some apparently natural, others made of metal. Anakin knew many cultures that had combined organic forms with technology. The Gungans were masters at that. And now he was going to witness, if not understand, how the Xenomans worked to achieve even more startling results. He felt an intense curiosity. The descending circle of forging tools stopped, and valves popped open between the hanging limbs. From the open valves descended an aromatic fluid that made Anakin's nose smart. The hoop quickly ascended. With a chant in Mungesan, the crew held out their blades and peered up. A hole about 100 meters wide had opened in the overgrowth. Above the hole roiled heavy black clouds. Anakin saw long tendrils rise from the circumference of the hole, their tips glinting. Across the factory valley, other holes opened over other pits. The air smelled electric.
The Tampazi controls the weather,
he whispered to Obi-Wan. A fair conclusion, Obi-Wan agreed. Vagno's face wrinkled, and he drew his arm back in anticipation. He turned his head away and motioned for Anakin and Obi-Wan to do the same. The tension in the air became unbearable. Anakin's hair crackled and his clothes clung to his skin, writhing as if alive. His eyeballs felt as if they would dance out over his cheeks. It was an awful sensation and he wanted to cry out. Simultaneously, sun-hot orange bolts of lightning tumbled from the thick, pillowing clouds, danced along the upraised iron-tipped tendrils, and fell with sizzling rage to the pits below. The bolts raced around the upraised tools of Vagno's forges quicker than the eye could follow, flinging the lances back, though the men held on with all the strength in their massive arms. The crew sang out as one and pushed the lances forward, and the bolts converged on the pit. Vagno cackled with glee.
It's a skyfire, he shouted. The best there can be.
The burst of flame where the bolt struck was intense. In just seconds, the pyre poured flame into the sky to a height of at least 40 meters. Then Anakin felt the voices of the seeds